From theheart.org radio, you are listening to Click and Rub with Drs. Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein.
This is Eric Topol with Paul Tierstein for a new edition of Click and Rub. We've been away for a while, but now we have a new recording device, and we should be good to go. And we have a really exciting segment because we're going to be discussing the recent JAMA paper on appropriateness of percutaneous coronary intervention. And my friend, Dr. Tierstein, has done an extensive research on this topic. And why don't you start off, Paul, the Wall Street Journal had as its headline, heart treatments overused.
Yeah.
What did you think about this?
I thought that was probably a bad headline. First of all, as I get older, I have to get more and more administrative roles. And so one of the roles now is running the cardiology division. And you really have to be focused on appropriateness. It's a very hot topic. It's an important topic. It's something that we really need to spend time on and learn about. And you really can influence the practice of your division, if you focus on it. So I was very eager to read about this. Been following the news from Baltimore also over the last year, as it pertains to intervention, and so this is really important stuff. So I was upset about the headline "Heart Treatment Overused," and I was actually a little upset with the way the JAMA paper portrayed the NCDR data. It's a very interesting paper because it makes very important points, and I'm all for the conclusion that they draw. But the paper is actually a subgroup analysis without ever presenting the entire group. So basically, they looked at 500,000 entries, procedures that were logged into the database. This is about 1,000 participating hospitals throughout the United States. Scripps is one of the participating hospitals, so we're very familiar with the data forms and how this works. And they use the recent ACC appropriateness criteria to determine whether or not the procedures were appropriate or not appropriate. Now, of the 500,000 procedures that they evaluated, only 4.1% were inappropriate. That's not so bad.
That's pretty impressive.
That's actually pretty good. I was actually very surprised.
And that would have been without the subgroup analysis, right?
Right. But then what happens is, and by the way, 4.1%, the reason that's so good is no one expects it to be 100%. Even if you read the manuscript, the appropriateness, the basic manuscript that was published in JACC in 2009, the points made, this is really just a framework for discussion that there's not a lot of agreement on the, there's limited agreement, some limits to the agreement, I'll put it that way, on the appropriateness scenarios. The physicians in the panel didn't all agree. When it was tested against 85 physicians that were different from the panel physicians, there was a lot of lack of concordance.
This is kind of a soft science, if you will, right?
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. So no one expects 100%. So to get 4.1% is not bad.
Right.
But the idea is this. The way the paper worked is they immediately subdivided the group into the acutes, which is acute MI, non-ST segment elevation MI, and acute coronary syndromes, or what they call high-risk acute coronary syndromes. And that represented 70%. Of the population.
Was that a skewed sample, or was that really representative of this? Do you think there was just more acute interventions in this?
It seems high, right?
Yeah, it does.
It seems very high, but the reason I think is that ACS, as it's defined, includes high-risk groups. And if you look at very carefully at the inclusion criteria, even it includes a patient with class 2 or 3, I think class 3 angina, who's over 75 years old. So I think it's a little bit different definition than you might intuit. But nevertheless, that's the data that this registry came up with, which is a lot of acute patients. Now, in that 70% group, so this is most of the patients, most of the procedures were considered appropriate, like 99%.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, it's not so amazing when you get in, when you sort of look at the appropriateness criteria, because there's about, for that group, there were about 10 scenarios, or actually more than that, I think 10 or 15 scenarios, and only two of them were considered inappropriate. So it's not so easy to be inappropriate. You know what those two were? Actually, in this registry, 100% of the inappropriates were one scenario, which was an ST segment elevation MI.
Yeah.
And you do the PCI more than 12 hours.
Oh. After.
And you know, that's actually controversial. I mean, that not everyone agrees that the 12-hour window is the correct window.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
especially if the patient's having trouble.
Yeah, I mean, and the way this would work, of course, is even if you were at hour 12 and a half,
right,
you would get dinged.
Oh, yeah.
So that's even, if you consider that the gray zone, then that's...
So maybe every single acute in this monstrous database
was appropriate. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that would take it down actually 3%
okay,
inappropriate use, which is really great.
I think.
And I think that point should be made before people think that we're overutilizing this technology like
crazy. Well, I mean, the Wall Street Journal went quickly into the pig roast in our...
Yeah.
The poor fellow, the sacrificial lamb, exactly. Mark Madej. I mean, you know, he didn't even get into any of this stuff, right?
I know. That's what always happens, is the data gets looked at in a way that'd be most controversial and most headline grabbing, and which is, that's unfortunate. But then there is something to be said for the stable, more stable group, non-acute group, because that group, there was more inappropriate use. There was about 12% by their criteria. Inappropriate use, and I think that there's some, and that only represented 30% of the population. So that's not, that's not so bad. But you know, we can learn from that.
And that was this issue about your bringing up with the subgroup, right?
Yeah. But if you look at the paper, that number 4%, it's not even in the paper ever.
Really?
I mean, there's not one place where it says only 4%.
Yeah.
Were inappropriate.
But even in the the non-acute patients, the inappropriate rate was billed as 12%, right?
Which you don't think it's so terrible either, right?
Well, given that there's some uncertainties about inappropriate, that would hardly make for headlines
anywhere.
Heart treatments overused. I mean, top page one, big, bold headlines. It seems to be overcooked there. I don't know.
Well, I agree with that, with the headlining of it, although I think that what's fun about it, and, you know, I think this subject is actually... I think the way to approach appropriateness is to try to make it into something that's actually interesting and challenging and stimulating and kind of fun to do. I take the perspective, having worked with so many physicians, particularly on the West Coast, up and down the West Coast, for so many years now, I think most of the cardiologists are trying to do a good job, and they want to do what's right for their patient. I really strongly believe that. There's some bad apples, I know, but most of them are really trying hard. So, if you bring it up in the right way, and we're trying to do this at Scripps now, you can get people to think about their usage of technology. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So.
I've been impressed at the conference that you will present all your cases and ask the question about appropriateness. Mm-hmm. So you've actually framed it as one of the conferences now.
Yeah. So we're doing appropriateness conferencing, and that's actually a good, a good segue that we we'll present this at that conference as well, this paper, because in the 12%, it's very interesting to see what kind of patient is being called inappropriate, and most of them fall into several criteria. First, they have minimal or absent symptoms. They have a stress test, and they have a stress test that is either low risk or maybe intermediate risk at the most. Their LAD is not involved. They have a disease that doesn't include the LAD. It's actually the only anatomic criteria in this registry, which is kind of, I think that's a problem.
But that's a little strange.
Yeah.
But, the only study that I did to really zoom in on this appropriateness was years ago, you may recall, we did a big private insurance database, and we found that there were a lot of patients who were going for elective procedures who didn't even have a stress test.
Right.
And that, I thought, was the one mark of perhaps that, we're crossing the line, unless it was such clear-cut angina. And if there's nothing objective about it, would that have been classified as inappropriate?
To not have a stress test?
Yeah.
So interestingly, in this study, in this registry, if you didn't have a stress test, they actually excluded you from the analysis because of their problems. Of it. You know,
I see.
And they were about, I think it was about 100,000, about 20% of the patients, I could have that number wrong, got excluded because they didn't, because they wanted to apply the stress test criteria, but they didn't have it. So that's always an issue. You know, nowadays we feel like we can do a stress test, you know, if we, you know, using FFR. And that data hasn't really permeated this registry.
They're not ready for that.
But it will. I mean, it's coming.
Well, as far as if someone had clear-cut ischemic symptoms and you verify that the culprit vessel had an abnormal FFR, perhaps that would be reasonable.
Sure. Yeah. But what do you do with a patient, for example, who meets the criteria if it was the LAD, but it's not the LAD? But it's a huge dominant circumflex.
Well, I don't understand this LAD thing. That seems really crazy. You could have really bad symptoms from a right and a circ or whatever. It could be a branch vessel.
Right.
What is this LAD fixation?
Well, I think it should be a surrogate for a lot of territory at risk is what it should be a surrogate for. And by the way, the symptoms also, to get inappropriate, you also have to be on not much medical therapy. So, you know, that would be the idea is that you should, you know, if it's not the LAD, you should, and they're not having that many symptoms, or they're having, you know, moderate symptoms, you should give them, you should make sure their medical therapy is maximized, which is not unreasonable. The problem I have with the LAD is it's really a surrogate for territory at risk, so you can have other vessels that are large, that you, with proximal lesions, that you would feel you really feel like this guy really needs to.
Well, now, when I first sent you this article and you looked at it, you sent me back a bunch of possible headlines.
Yes.
Tell me about that, because that was pretty impressive.
I said, we'll see what the headline, you had an embargoed copy and you let me look at it the day before, and I said, well, tomorrow we're going to have headlines that will either say something like heart treatment overused, or it could say only 4.1% of procedures deemed inappropriate. In fact, it could even say only 3.1% if you take out the acute MIs performed less more than 12 hours. And the other possibility was that was underuse, because, you know, there's this whole uncertain group, 38% in this registry, 38% of the patients intervened upon with PCI had uncertain appropriateness, which is, if you read the paper on appropriateness, is clearly not either, it's not appropriate or inappropriate. It's, we just don't know.
In the gray zone.
It's
real gray zone.
We don't really have
it wasn't really uncertain, almost leaning. It was really unknown.
Yeah, okay. And they make the point in the paper that you're not supposed to interpret that as a negative, as you shouldn't do it. It's just, we just don't know. So, you know, let's assume half of those turn out to be appropriate. Well, you know, a lot of people aren't going to treat those. If they're uncertain, so there's by inference you could imagine there's a lot of patients getting angiograms that should get intervention, and they're not.
Yes.
So we could have had that as a headline
that's,
too.
That's right.
PCI underutilized.
I don't think so. With courage and as you called it, the frame to the jihad.
So
against intervention.
But let's just talk for a second, because I think it's about what to do if you're running a program and you want to figure out how to. Make sure that the folks intervening, you know, in your cath lab are doing the right thing. So I've thought a lot about this, and this is what I've come up with. And I'd be interested in knowing what people think about it and if we could add some ideas to it. I decided that the best way to influence behavior would not to be so much to show statistics, but to go over individual cases that physicians have performed and get some feedback from a large group about whether it was right or wrong and why. And then to put everyone on notice that we would be doing this and we'd be selecting cases pretty much at random. What we did is we started, based on the Baltimore issue, we started looking at really lesions that were borderline. Because if you remember, the problem in Baltimore, the alleged problem, was that the physician was performing PCI, stenting patients with only a 50% lesion,
right,
yet calling it like 80%.
Yeah,
but yet when he looked at it again in retrospect, he said, "No, it's only 50%." And also, he was allegedly overstating the degree of symptoms. So that if you looked at the chart, the procedure note said the patient was having a lot of angina, but if you looked at the chart, you really couldn't find it. So, with that in mind, what we did is we went through our ACC database data for a given month. And we pick someone has to do this. I did the first one, and then we kind of rotate it and kind of make it It shouldn't be all interventionalists doing it. In fact, our fellows are really enjoying doing it now. They want to do this. They love doing it because it provokes controversy, and they enjoy that. So what would they do is they go through the database looking at lesions that are borderline. So they ask our techs who run it to pull out all 70% or less lesions. And then they look at a few films to find some that look like maybe they're 70%. They were called 70%, but maybe they're not so quite 70%, right, you know? Right. And it's not that easy to find them. It's going to get harder as we roll this out. That's the idea, is because the doctors are going to not be so keen on intervening. And they're going to see if they've done FFR on those, see if they've done IVUS, and then present the case and extract from the history and physical, from the mission note, to see what kind of symptoms they've had, look at the medical therapy, and see what they did and see how the patient did. And what that does is it gives us a chance to discuss all of this and bring in the data as we can. And it also puts everyone on notice that we're going to be looking at them.
Yeah.
And based on this paper, so here's the positive impact of this paper.
Yeah, we're looking for something positive.
No, I disagree with the way they presented it, but I think the positive output is I'm going to add to that list of things patients with minimal symptoms and with low-risk treadmills. Assuming we can get the data well. Now, one thing that was never said in any of this is that the data we're collecting is very, very low-quality data. When you're used to doing serious clinical research, we have monitors.
This
come
is
in.
ACC database.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We do our best, but we've got our fellows.
It's all voluntary, and who wants to put a lot of time in and be meticulous about details in there, right?
Well, the only way to collect clinical data that I know of is to have someone dedicated to it, so it costs money. Then you have to have a monitor come in double check.
This is the El Cheapo alternative, right?
So you don't have no monitoring, and you have, for most hospitals, there's usually one FTE per about 1,000 stent procedures.
Yeah.
Which is not very many. And then you've got, what you do is you have the techs usually filling out the data forms, so that's done. Some of them are good, some of them are not. Or in our case, we have the techs and the fellows. So the fellows do a lot of the angiographic. And you know how it is with the fellows. Some of them are going to take it seriously and try to do it exactly right. And some of them aren't. And they change every year. So
the quality of the data to make the call here is a little shaky.
Right. So, yeah. But I think, still, I think it's a...
It's unaudited. It's collected in a very, questionable fashion. Perhaps.
And the definitions are questionable.
Basically using big numbers to try to overwhelm some of the shakiness in the data.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is why you have to figure we're not going to get to 100% appropriateness ever. And we don't even know what appropriateness really is because the definitions are so shaky. But nevertheless.
Yes.
I think respect. It's a good thing to do.
Right.
It's something... something virtuous, there's something we should all be looking at it. We should all be trying to, do the right thing and make sure we educate each other. And also when we need to educate the press and educate, those who are inspecting us, that this isn't so easy. And I think that's the way we'll get the best outcomes.
Well, I think too, whenever there's times like we're in today, economic crisis in medicine, you're going to try to pick things that are frequently used procedures, and this is just fodder for that. And, it can be somewhat hyperbolic. We know that we had an earlier click and rub over a year ago about McAllen, Texas, and the New Yorker article. I mean, there are places where things are perhaps a little out of sorts, and this brings that just to attention. But nonetheless, I think you made up a lot of really good points, and it's refreshing to hear about... the coronary intervention community actually accepting this and using it as a positive. That's great.
That's the good
really
news.
Great. Well, thanks really a lot. And next time when we convene, we'll come up with something that's got a little more...
controversy. Well, we have to disagree. We've been working together for 5 years now, so we don't disagree enough.
Yeah, that's right. We'll work on that. Thanks a lot, Paul.
You've been listening to Click and Rub with Drs. Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein on the Heart.org radio, sharing ideas and opinions with the cardiology community worldwide. Find out more on theheart.org.